5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Earth below us, drifting, falling, flow.
Welcome to AnnaZone 23, where we look at old anime, especially movies and OVAs. These are the films and projects that help shape the anime landscape as we know it today. We want to look at them in their own era and how they were the inspiration for many of the shows and franchises that are popular today. Some have become legends, while others have been deservedly forgotten. All of them, you should remind yourself, someone had to draw that.
Thanks, Major Tom.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of AnnaZone 23. I'm your host, Rick.
I'm Drew.
And on this week's episode of AnnaZone 23, we are going to be talking about what is probably our newest series that we've ever spoken about. By new, we still mean 20 years old, almost. Actually, I believe the manga series might be 20 years old. It's 20 years old in May next year. And that is Gunslinger Girl. And the reason why we are talking about Gunslinger Girl is we're not talking about the whole series. We're just talking about the first four, and that is because today is Christmas. So Merry Christmas to everyone and happy holidays to everyone who does not celebrate Christmas. So yeah, this is our newest series that we've covered, and this is... Drew, would you like to kind of go a little bit more into what this micro examination of a series, well, the series that we're examining?
Gunslinger, its inspirations are pretty obvious. The idea is that it's set in a secret government agency in Italy in a contemporary but slightly differentiated modern setting. Cybernetics are moving along really fast, especially in Italy in this case. Some company has made a breakthrough. Politics are about where they were, except that there was a nuclear explosion in the Balkans at some point. And the Italian northern separatist movement, the Five Republics, has moved up into a near civil war, or those of you know any Italian history, dirty war with the Italian government. Basically, we don't want our taxes going to fund those deadbeats in the south. So let's just cut everything south of Rome loose. As a story, it's a story of number of young girls who are found, usually in awful situations that are likely to lead to their immediate demise or should have led to their immediate demise, who are then cybernized and trained as assassins for the government. They are all somewhere between about 15 and 11, depending on the girl, although some might be a little older. And it has a lot of shades of two movies by Luc Besson that you may have heard of, La Femme Nikita and Leon the Professional, definite influences on this. There are a few other anime that have also obviously influenced it. And the story is basically of, well, the base plot is the Civil War, but that is very much in the background. The central plot is the Fratello teams, which basically translates as siblings, which is you have one professional police officer slash ex-military operative and his girl, his little sister, who in this case is closer to a big daddy, if you know your BioShock, who is a cyborg assassin who has been conditioned, here read brainwashed, to adore their handler. And this is not a very comfortable situation for most of the handlers, because most of the handlers are, despite the nasty things, are fairly honest men and are not really cut out to handle a precocious killing machine. That's the basic story of it. We're actually mostly dealing with episode 4, because episode 4, one, is set right at Christmas in Naples, and two is the one point where the story sets up its secondary plot, because, as I said, the primary plot is very distant from the main characters. They do not have much control over it and less knowledge of it. Even the handlers don't have much control or knowledge of it, with the possible exception of Jean, who we'll get to in a minute. So it's in that way, it's actually very Evangelion-like. You are very much in a pawn's eye view of a much larger plot. Go ahead, Rick.
So one of the first things that I want to talk about, so I obviously think that we should go over the characters, but before we get into any of the characters involved, one of the things I definitely want to point out as and definitely give some big props to is the sound design on this particular anime. The sound design on this is fantastic because there's a lot of stuff that a lot of times anime in terms of sound design will shortcut on that they don't shortcut on. A good example, well, first off, like we said, these are little girl cyborg assassins. So gunplay is very common in this. And the one thing that they do a very good job on with the sound design is all of the sound has weight, if you catch what I mean. A great example is in that first episode. In the first episode, we'll go ahead and introduce here. I'll let you talk about them in a second. Our main characters, who are not actually the focus of the episode we're talking about today, but Henrietta and her handler, who is Jose. So obviously, things go south during an assignment. Gunplay is involved. And one of the big things is that you can actually hear a difference in the sound of her spent casings when they come out of the gun and hit the ground. A lot of times, sound design, there'll just be a generic sound of metal hitting the ground. But you can tell that they actually, I've gone shooting before, so I know what it sounds like when casings hit the ground indoors. There is a specific sound, and there's that, like things such as knocking on doors have like an immense weight to them. Even small things such as footsteps, like when two characters, I think it's in episode 4, where the two characters, one is a grown ass man and the other is a teenage girl. When they're walking, there's a distinct different sound to their footsteps. They're not just using a just generic footstep sound. And in addition, they're actually making sure to time the footsteps to the walk cycles. There's a lot of animation that when you watch it and you don't even notice it unless you know to look for it, the walk cycle isn't timed to the footstep noise because they're using a generic footfall. And so that's one thing I want to point out. The other thing is, because I'm a nerd in other terms, such as music, our main character, our main girl character, Henrietta, we'll go a little bit more into we'll talk about Henry and Jose a little bit because, you know, they are the main characters, I'd say, of the first series. And then we'll also talk about the characters that are
of the whole show.
The whole show. And we'll also talk about the two characters that are most important to the episode that we're primarily discussing today. So Henry and Jose, each of the girls has their own kind of signature weapon. And for Henrietta, it's a P90. But obviously a small girl carrying a P90 around in public would draw a lot of attention. So she stores it in a violin case. That violin case says Amati on it. Now, me being a music guy, there's two levels to that. First, Amati is a very common stencil name there's a lot of different manufacturers. They'll manufacture instruments, and then distributors will put their own name on it, or a name that they choose to make it sound more prestigious than, like, you're purchasing from Music 123 or Music AB or, like, you know, 1-800 Music or something like that. But they don't want to have, like, they want to have a brand that sounds prestigious. That's one of those. They basically take other manufactured instruments, sometimes from Czechoslovakia, sometimes from China, put their name on it. It's a common one. I knew a buddy that had one in college. The reason why the Amati name sounds prestigious in the world of music is because there actually was an Italian violin maker named Amati, who that family, if I remember correctly, I think it was, they were active as violin makers from 1538 to 1740. And they are equal to Stradivari, the Stradivarius violins, in terms of quality and in terms of value. You know, so we've all seen in movies where they're talking about, oh, it's the price of Stradivarius violin. You know, rarity, they're not actually used anymore. But that's where kind of that reference comes from. And that's, I always found that kind of an interesting thing to note when I was watching the series.
And that the creator did a lot of research and has also probably has more education than is good for him. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, I think so. So, and her handler is Jose. And he's a little different from some of the other handlers. He kind of has a little bit of a different different view on things in some of them.
Jose is kind of weak, actually.
Yeah, he's as
you kind of notice, it doesn't come up as much early, but you kind of get the impression that he is under and has been under his brother's thumb most of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Brother's name is Jean. The fact that they're Jean and Jose, even though they're Italian, points out something else. They're very northern Italian. They're both from Milan. And their mother, I believe, was Swiss. Probably Swiss Italian. Which means that, as far as family background comes from, they are top class of the same group of people that they are opposing. The five republics are very much based in the Milan area, in the northern part of Italy. And Jean and Jose come from an old blood.
Mm-hmm.
Quite wealthy. And they were both, before they were dragged into this, for reasons that involved why they don't have any other family, they were in the Carabinieri, which is roughly somewhere between the KGB and the Texas Rangers in Italian society. It's an extension of the old French gendarme. It's a military/police/border guard organization.
Yeah, the gendarmerie.
Yeah, they're very much... they are descended from the gendarmerie. The French set them up initially.
If you've never looked into it, by the way, you should look into some of the unique arms that the French came up with for the gendarmerie. They're absolutely bonkers. It's a very unique organization in terms of what they would use. But anyways.
Yeah. But as I said, the Carabinieri, they're both officers in the Carabinieri.
Yeah.
And it's obviously Jean is the more dominant of the two brothers. He's, I think, second in command of the organization. And he also runs a cyborg and ran a cyborg before his brother did. Henrietta is a small girl with a little pageboy haircut who is a survivor of a house invasion/massacre for reasons we're never told why their family was massacred in front of her, basically, and she was badly mutilated. She is named, however, for Jean and Jose's little sister, Enrica, who is no longer alive when the story starts. In fact, is the reason that they're in the organization in the first place. Henrietta is definitely the face character for the series. She is a bit of a flat character, but she shows up in a lot of the art. Her character design has been borrowed or stolen for Gun Gale Online. The girl in the pink...
A little bit, but like in terms of
personality, not the same.
But yeah,
the look is definitely very copied.
I would say the haircut primarily, the haircut, and then the use of a P90 primarily. The difference is that she uses two
clothing sets, but the character design is very similar.
Yeah,
it's a case of Guzzlinger Girl. Very few of the characters were directly lifted into anything else, but a lot of their character designs were later co-opted by other series for various reasons, and Henrietta, definitely the lead in Gun Gale Online, looks a lot like her. By the way, which is another place you might have seen an FP90.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not an FP90, it's just a P90.
Why am I getting it with FP? Anyhow, Jose, as I said, is the one who's basically trying to treat Henrietta as a replacement little sister, quite literally. Whereas Jean, his cyborg, was basically crippled and bedridden from birth. And she has memories of her previous life, which most of the girls have been conditioned out of. But her memories are basically being unable to move, for the most part. So she is quite happy, if a little primitive, to do whatever Jean says. And Jean basically treats her like an attack dog. Although most dog handlers treat their dogs nicer than Jean treats Rico.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty businesslike with Rico, at best. He has occasional moments of softness, but he's also punched her a few times, too, when her mind wanders.
It's interesting, because it is like a case of... yeah, it really is sort of a case of very different viewpoints on both of them.
Yeah, they're definitely set up as, you know, as a mixed pair of brothers. There's a lot of history going on later on the manga that will get spoon-fed over a number of years. But the point is, most of it, none of it will really shock you, because he's been showing you this for years and years before he finally tells you the exact, you know, story behind it. Mm-hmm. As I said, Jean's girl is named Riko, and unlike Henrietta, she tends to dress more in a tomboy manner, or more like Jean can't be bothered to get her fancy clothes, whereas José famously spoils Henrietta rotten. She's usually dressed like, you know, Little Miss Fauntleroy.
Yeah, because Riko is usually, if I remember correctly, she's usually dressed pretty basic.
Sweatpants, you know.
Or like jeans and like a long sleeve shirt.
Yeah. And her name also, it probably reflects something, because Riko is another form of Henry from Italian.
Yeah, I'd say she's very functional in the way she's
very functional. And Riko is also the main character in the movie Little Caesar, which led to what are called the Riko laws, which are U.S. laws, but something that somebody like Jean would have been familiar with. If you ever see enough U.S. police procedurals, usually it's the FBI threatening to go Riko on somebody. That's the Racketeering, Influence, and Corrupt Organizations Act. Which is basically, if we can convict you on two things, we can multiply 5-year sentences into 10-year sentences.
Yeah.
And it's not something, if you are like an organization, say a mafia or something, it is very scary. And Jean seems to have named his girl after something very scary. But Riko is actually one of the sweetest girls you'll ever meet. She's just sweet, primitive.
Well, yeah, she's also happy to be able to walk.
She's also happy to be able to walk and dance and do laundry and punch suspects to get information out of them. She's a sweet kid, but she's been raised by wolves, or Jean, which is probably worse.
Yeah, I'd take the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
At least there'd be a sense of community if I was raised by wolves.
As I said, there's a little bit of Evangelion bits floating around in Gunslinger Girl. One of the things is there's a lot of rays.
Yeah.
In one shape or another, there are several, because the girls are pretty emotionally inhibited for the most part. And they have different bits and pieces of ray embedded in several of them. Especially Riko. Because Riko, like I said, she was raised by wolves. And these two, this brother pair and their cyborgs are most definitely tied into the main plot, the ongoing Civil War plot. However, that is a, to quote the famous thespian Bugs Bunny, but what'd you expect at an opera? A happy
ending? Yeah, if you read ahead what the ending of this, of the actual manga series is, dear God.
Well, you kind of know it from the beginning. You kind of, you're looking at this and you're like, oh, this is not going to end well.
Yeah.
Still. Yes, but well, no. So we get to it's chapter 3 of the manga, but episode 4 of the anime, we move on to our third pair. There are actually 5 central girls. We'll touch on the last two briefly. But third girl is Triella. And Triella is easily the oldest of the girls. She looks like she might be physically 15 or 16, give or take. She's a little bit on the skinny side and kind of petite, but she definitely has the look of an older girl.
She definitely comes off as the oldest of the
original 5, yes. She's the oldest of the first generation cyborgs. She was, canonically, she is the second one to be activated. We'll meet the first one later.
Yeah, she's
the oldest active one that's still functional most of the time. And she's also the most physically unusual of the bunch. She's dark-skinned, kind of a dusky brown, with blonde hair in long Sailor Moon-esque twin tails, but without the meatball ones.
Yeah, she's got the what most characters have done twin tails since then.
And her dress sense, as given by her handler, though, is usually black suit, including tie and vest. occasionally mixed in with a long skirt, and usually with a long trench coat, black. And she, as I said, she and her handler stand out in a lot of ways from the rest of the story, which is important because they sort of represent the one character arc that is separate from the plot arc. First of all, her handler is not Italian. He's actually a German ex-Interpol agent by the name of Victor Hilscher or Hirscher, depending on which version you're looking at, although that's not his real name. Victor is, but it's not his real last name. And go ahead.
He's
an ex-Interpol agent. He was definitely with Interpol at one point. And he's also a pretty straight arrow, just in his general manners.
Well, and it's the case of his background's actually what lead us
into this. His background is why he gets called for this particular episode. But the important thing is the first episode, the third episode, the episode opens pretty early on Trailer running down a suspect, dumping him over her shoulder, pinning him to the ground, and putting a gun to his back. And as Hilscher walks up and says, it's all right, dude. I just want to ask you a couple questions. The moron goes for a gun inside of his shirt, and Triella shoots him through the shoulder. And Victor's like, why'd you shoot him? You know, you could have just, I was just like, I made the judgment that you were in danger. If you don't like it, maybe you should condition me more. This is the first time we've seen a cyborg backtalk their handler at all. And it's clear that that's about the level they're on. Quickly comes off as father and precocious daughter more than anything else.
Pretty much.
Because while she's snaps back at him and she has a very low opinion of most other adults, Triella also shares a lot of Victor's characterization. A lot of his character traits have rubbed off on her. She knows that what she is doing is not really legal. Doesn't stop her from doing it, but she's aware that she's being brainwashed, although not nearly as much as some of the other girls. Victor doesn't like to use the conditioner as much as he can, as little as he can help it, at least. But it does mean that there's a lot of confusion in their roles. They kind of work very well together, but they don't get along that well. Might be the best description of it. Partly also because Victor doesn't seem like the kind of person who can handle kids.
So one other thing I want to kind of point out before we go in is we like, I always point this out when there's definitely, you have a nerd writing this stuff. So these are all Italian government agents. They're using a wide variety of weaponry for a government agency.
One, it's an anime, so they're going to do that. Two, they're also not supposed to exist. They're the Men in Black.
It's true. It's just, it's interesting because I looked over when I looked over the listing of everything that's used, and they use everything except for the most like Italian weapon out there. Good old Beretta M9. The closest we get is that Rico uses a Bellini M4 shotgun.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In fact, most of the weapons they use are German or Austrian. It's just kind of interesting. Also, where did Rico get an SVD? Weapons
American, actually.
Yeah, but hers is also oldest dirt.
Her signature weapon, although, again, in this episode she never uses it, is a Winchester trench gun shotgun.
Yeah, that's the one nice thing about this particular episode is that it doesn't go into the firearms as much. It's more about the actual characters.
I think the firearms thing might have been more dreamed up by the editor to give them something to hang the characters on, because they actually post to this series, the girls were actually brought in for a one of the browser based gun personalized, you know, guns at world games.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a Girls Frontline did a collaboration with Gunslinger Girl, which is interesting considering Gunslinger, like the last thing that Gunslinger Girl did was the last volume came out in 2012.
A little bit later than that. It was
Girls Frontline is only like 2 or 3 years old.
Gunslinger Girl has a fairly is known. It's just never been that high up in the popularity polls, and it has a misaimed, and it is one of those shows that about half the fandom I really worry about.
Well, there's a lot of things. When I saw that particular collaboration, I'm like, that worries me and also doesn't surprise me, because I have seen some of the forums on, or some of the people that are into Girls Frontline, and
Frontline stuff.
That concerns me.
Certain people like myself who find the character work really excellent and the storytelling stuff really works well. It's a very good Pawn's Eye view. And then you have some, I think they're mostly 15 years old and they're boys who think it would be really cool to have a cyber assassin at their beck and call.
It's like, that's not the point of this. The point of this is that this is supposed to be...
If you actually had to do that, you'd be curled up in a ball and suck it on your thumb inside of a week.
Yeah, it's... I don't view... Like, I've never viewed the concept of Gunslinger Girl as like, oh, that's so cool. I'm like, no, that's fucking terrifying.
But there's a certain...
Like on a humanity, it's like, it's supposed to be sort of
been, oh, that is so cool. And I shake my head at it every time I hear about it. But anyway,
because it's one of those when you break it down, one of the things I want to point out is that most of these girls, and we'll kind of get into this as we talk about the episode too, like you said, it'd be early on, like for all intents and purposes, no one's going to care. The reason why they chose these ones is because either they should be dead or have been legally declared dead, or no one's going to care if they end up dead.
Signed her away
kind of situation.
Angelina, who we'll get to, her dad tried to run her over. Henry's parents are dead. Well, we'll get to Triella in a minute. And we never do learn where Clayce came from.
Because that's the thing that a lot of people kind of, some of the people I've run across with this series, like completely miss, is that, hey, goofballs, this is a, Gunslinger Girl's a tragedy.
It's an opera.
It's a straight up tragedy. And it's so some of the stuff that people get like really like that's what, one of the things I'm like when I saw that collaboration, I was like, are you? Oh, good God. Completely like, to it me, is, sort of missing.
It's definitely point. Missing the point to some degree, because it's encouraging the side of the fandom that wasn't really that big. Again, though, Triella and Victor are sort of the weird edge case, because Triella, while she's very snide with her handler, is very nice to all the other girls. She's really their big sis. She's pushing Henrietta to talk to Jose, to ask him for favors, or ask him to, you know, spend a little time with her on the holidays. She holds tea parties in her room, which amuses her roommate to no end. The other thing that, which is what's also interesting at these tea parties, is usually for Henrietta and sometimes Rico, and occasionally for the other girl, but she's been sick, is that the other girls, you'll see Henrietta playing with what Triella has been getting at Christmas and birthday, or equivalent, probably twice a year, for her entire time active, because she's been at the agency for about 3 to 5 years now. She has been, and anytime that there's a holiday, her handler gets her a present, and it's always a teddy bear, because he's a man who doesn't understand kids.
And that's basically brings us right into the actual episode we want to talk about today, and that is, well, it's episode 4, and it's coming up. It's interesting because of all the episodes I think we're going to talk about, this is going to be the least Christmassy of all the Christmas episodes.
It's also set in Italy, which isn't, Italy is a pretty Christmassy country, but it's not Bavaria. It's not the German Christmas market.
It's not like Bavaria. It's not like England. It's not like the U.S. It's a different.
Anyway, we're probably pretty sure that Victor is from the West Rhineland. We're not 100% on that, but one thing, generally prefers wine to beer. And two, Triella is usually considered to be a feminization of the city of Trier, which is in the Upper Rhineland. It's a very nice place. It got bombed a bit during World War II, as I recall. But it's still got a lot of its old buildings. It's one of those, you know, neat, ancient, neat old places.
So why don't you go ahead then, Drew? I think that's a good way to get going into the basically the setup for this setup episode.
Is they're having a little tea party in Cleus and Triella's room. We see Triella's roommate, Cleus, who's a little girl, a slightly younger girl with glasses and a very studious manner and no handler. We'll get to that. Is kind of looking amused at Triella, who's running the tea table for Henrietta, and then Rico comes in with a nice shiner because Jean got frustrated with her. And then Triella is summoned, called in because they've got a mission. And she's like, okay. He's like, we're going down to pack up. We're going to be gone for a few days. We're going down to Naples to find an old acquaintance of mine. And Triella just answers, are we going to shoot him? Actually, she says it much flatter than that. It's like, are we going to shoot him? No. He's agreed to turn evidence. He's at Camorra, which is the Naples equivalent of the mafia. To turn state.
Yeah, the Camorra.
You know, agreed to turn weight.
Yeah, I took a class on the organized crime of Italy when I was in college, and the Camorra. Those of you listening, if you are familiar with like the mafia like tropes and stuff, the Camorra are like much worse. Like they're far scarier than the actual than what you're used to hearing about the mafia.
Yeah, well, one thing, Naples is a little bit better off. There's more money to skim, and they got a volcano right there to dump bodies on the slopes of, which they do. And he's like, no, he's agreed to turn evidence against the Camorra. But then he disappeared before we could put him in protective custody. So we got to track him down and babysit him and get him into a safe house.
Yeah, because it's a section. The organization the cover for the organization they work for is a it's called the Social Welfare Agency. So its cover is that it's not a, you know, black ops level law enforcement agency.
No, it's officially a benevolent society. Or, it's kind of like the Shriners doing surgeries on crippled children, which they do on the side.
Yeah.
But they also funnel a certain percentage of their patients to the Cutting Edge program, which is the assassins. But as Triella points out,
i.e. the ones that you know, nobody's going to missing. Care if they go, you know, off grid.
But as Triella points out, this is more for the Investigation Bureau, which doesn't have cyborgs. They usually don't use cyborgs for detective work.
Yeah, section one is like
normal. That's the normal black ops. You know, that's the FBI, basically. He's like, why are we doing this? And he's like, well, one, I know this guy. I knew him back when I was in Europol. So we have a bit of a history. He'll listen to me. And also points out that Triella and Hillshire are considered a little bit special for a Fratello team. They get the interesting jobs. The ones that actually require, you know, thought. So they're wandering around Naples. Triella's carrying probably her shotgun and definitely some other weapon and probably some other equipment in an artist's easel case slung over her shoulder.
Yeah.
And they're basically checking out all the dives and back alleys and other things through Naples. And after a little bit of hunting, they find Mario Bossi, the man they're looking for, who hasn't seen Hillshire since Hillshire went off the grid 5 years ago. It's like, you know, what happened to you? You ever hear about the Italian secret? You know, the Italians might be running something? Well, this is it. She's like, so that's one of those assassins? He's like, yes, he is. And Mario is like saying, well, I'll do the witnesses thing. I got some things to take care of in town first. He's like, you're with us. We got to get you in here. All of the Camorra and half the cops are looking for you right now. So he gets handcuffed to Triella, who's not half pleased about that.
She's also not having the best of days.
Remember, she has a German handler. She's the second operating cyborg, And yes, she's having, it's that time of the month. And she has the parts still to have that time of the month. And she can't take drugs to kill the pain because they interfere with the other drugs that are keeping her cyborg parts working.
Yeah, and it's something they actually talk about a bit, is that when they, you know, they can't get, like, they've got a heightened resistance to damage, but it's a catch-22 because the more damage they take, the shorter their operational
basically span. The drugs they need to put them under with to fix them are very similar to the conditioning drugs, and any of those will slowly just start to destroy their mind.
Or just stop being effective. But I just took it as eventually they will still stop having an effect, at which point they're not able to, you know.
Well, it's mostly mental. Because we'll get to see where the first unit is in a couple of episodes, and it's not a very happy sight. So they're doing somewhere between the Defiant Ones or what's the name of it? Midnight Run. Pick your show where you have to carry a fugitive, you know, through a gauntlet or something. Yeah. And then Mario springs a bit on poor Triella. He's got to go. And
which I will say this, when I first saw this episode, I'm like, that is one of the oldest.
It's a standard bit in the book. They do a pretty good job of it. The interesting thing is, though, while Mario is theoretically taking care of business, he's asking Triola about working with Hilscher. And she's like, it's not much to say. He's like, how the heck do you, he's a bit of a straight arrow. How the heck did he get to know you? He's like, well, back in the day, Hilscher was with Interpol. He was working in Amsterdam. I was part of the smuggling business for the Camorra in Amsterdam. And we weren't making money with our previous thing, so we started smuggling lambs into Amsterdam. And that was, at that point, I decided I wanted to get out of it. And Hilscher kind of helped me with that. And it didn't do good for his career. So don't be so nasty to him. At which point, he ducks over the stall, dives out the window, and slides down the soil pipe. And Triella discovers that she's been handcuffed to the stall.
Nothing
slows her down. She rips the handcuffs apart with her bare hands. Or gloved hands, actually.
One of the things I do want to point out is the trade that he was taking part in. It's highly, I don't know if it's flat out said in this episode, but it's highly suggested that Triella was part of that trade.
Get to that. We'll get back to that because notice he's evasive about it, and very evasive about it. But basically, so Triella is hot on his trail, not in a good mood, and. First of all,
you've just pissed off the cyborg assassin for a few minutes. Protecting you.
The problem is, as soon as he gives her the slip, some of his old associates find him. He's like, get in the car. The boss wants to talk to you. He's like, well, you better hurry up because someone scary is about to show up. Cue to Triella running full pelt down the middle of the road, pistol in hand, just daring them to shoot at her. And starting a shootout in the middle of the street in Naples, at which I think she shoots three guys and knocks out the guy with the knife with a kick. But she also takes three bullets to her left arm. Or is it her right arm? I think it's her right arm. She carries her one gun arm up high near her face. We need her arms because their eyes are the only part that really isn't armored.
Yeah, it's her right because the arm that takes the hit is the one that's holding her pistol.
Yeah, she's carrying two pistols, actually. Because she goes to a secondary pistol with her left hand. And then hand-to-hand to take out the last guy. And then she's just like, okay, you must really like handcuffs, Mario. Let's go. He's like, are you okay? And she looks at him and he's like, no, I've had cramps and I just had to run 3 miles. Of course I'm not okay. And in the manga, they don't really show this scene in the anime, which is too bad. In the manga, she holds up her right arm, which has got 3 bullet holes that aren't really bleeding. They're bleeding, but she's not gushing blood a bit. And she says, yeah, see, look at this. It's not green or anything. My blood's just the same, you know, My blood's just like yours. Now, in episode 3, and Trela's very short cameo in episode 3, which is really Rico's episode, what does Trela mention when Rico talks about having lessons? Because apparently Hillshire is the one who does the tutoring for the girls.
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
She does something extremely snarky. She's like, Trela, read Shylock's line. What's Shylock's line? What's Shylock's most famous line from The Merchant of Venice?
Shoot.
You cut us, do we not bleed?
Bleed, oh,
so
right.
So she's making an allusion. It's like, yes, her handler drives her makes her very annoyed, angry, and kind of mad at the world in some ways. But he's also the biggest influence on what she became. She's throwing it right, yeah. You know. Oh. But it's very subtle because, A, it's not in the anime. It's only in the manga. Because they left out the fact that she was, you know, has 3 bullet holes in her right arm.
Yeah, because it's only a single. I think she only gets hit once in the anime.
But, so she's like, yeah, look, yeah, I'm fine. So why did you ran away from us anyway? And he's like, it's my daughter. I have a daughter. I haven't seen her in a number of years. I send her something every Christmas. And I had to see her before I, you know, went into hiding. And Trail's like, well, all right. I'll tell Hillshire that you got away. Now you go. He's like, kid, don't give Hillshire so much trouble. And where did you ever come from anyway? And she looks at him and says, all I know is they found me in Amsterdam. At which point, Mario looks like he's seen a ghost. He's just thrown his previous remark about lambs right back in his face. Like, I know you were I know you were being evasive. I know exactly what you were talking about. And Mario has probably connected a few things that she doesn't know as well. So we're setting up an awful lot of subplot for down the line. Because this is going to continue in the background for many, many issues. Part of it will be resolved in the second season, but part of it won't be resolved until volume 10 of the manga.
What second
out of 15.
What second season? There is no second season of Gunslinger Girl. Don't you know that? The explanation behind that one is when I was president of the anime club, the president before me, the two of us had a joke about El Tatrino, which is the second season. And it's like, what do you mean? There was only one season of Gunslinger Girl. There was never a second season. It was done about 4 or 5 years after the original run. No, it was done about four or 5 years after the original run of the show, the first one. And it was done by a different studio. It's even
on a much smaller budget.
Much smaller, but it almost doesn't look like the same show anymore. The only actually Trela is about the only way that you could tell that it's the same show, to be completely honest. Because Henrietta looks
pretty similar.
Different in El
Clayus actually probably changes the least of all of them. Trela is just a very recognizable character design.
Yeah. Like you almost like when I first saw it, I'm not kidding you. I thought I was watching
Cheaper. It's the problem with El Tatrino is that season 1 of Gunslinger Girl is very well done, but it doesn't cover a lot of story. It's almost introduce the characters, have a couple of adventures, and end.
We get one arc.
Whereas season 2, El Tatrino, which covers about up to halfway through issue 6, of volume 6 of the manga, is first of all mostly centered around Trela. It's basically Trela meets her nemesis, and that's the central story. And in learning to beat her nemesis, she also starts to learn something about her past. And there's a few other subplots mixed in there, which are quite interesting. The problem is it's not very well animated at all.
Oh no, I just realized El Tatrino turns Rico into a saber face.
Yeah, Rico does look very saber faced.
You know, I just noticed that looking up pictures of the characters. Oh no.
Did you see pictures of Rico doing an interrogation in El Tatrino?
Yes, I did. And the thing is, I'm looking at it, and the reason Even some of the pictures of the first season, it's kind of like that. Well, because what I was thinking of is the difference between Gunslinger Girl, the first season, and El Totrino is kind of like the Fate anime in reverse. So for people that are fans of Fate, there was Fate Stay Night, which was done by Studio Dean in 06, which is generally considered to be bad and look bad. And then we had the Studio Ufotable stuff that's come out over the last, 10 years. Which is a vast improvement. Well, Gunslinger Girl, it's like that, but backwards. You had the really good looking one first, and then the one that was more bland or less.
Yeah, it's very generic. Very generic anime TV show. And the problem is that it has the better plot.
It has the better plot, but it's close. It's not as well produced as the first part.
But that carries it about a third of the way through the series. But Gunslinger Girl doesn't move very fast.
No, it does not.
So there are several stories that basically take an entire volume to go through. So by the end of volume 5, we've met the daughter of Mario, and we've also learned a little bit more about what happened with Hilscher and Mario, what actually happened in Amsterdam. But Triella won't find out until volume 10. So there's a lot of story going on here, there, and everywhere.
And remember how I mentioned earlier, the Gunslinger Girl is a tragedy. Did you mention what the traffic was for?
Well, if you haven't figured it out, it was human trafficking.
Yes, but you want to know what the human trafficking specifically was for.
Find that out, because right at this point, we don't know.
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
Yeah, you're not good. Let's put it this way. Even among human trafficking,
yeah, it's
this
pretty
is
bad.
Pretty fucked up.
By the way, the interesting thing is when they made the live action version of Ghost in the Shell, they gave Major Katsuragi Triella's backstory, essentially. Pretty
really?
Much it's saying
I've not watched like hardly any of the anime live action adaptations that have come out.
Basically,
they
say your name used to be, you used to be this girl, blah blah blah. It's they moved it off from, because original Katsuragi is closer to Riko. She's just been in an artificial body her whole life, because her original body barely couldn't keep her alive. And she's afraid that she's nothing more than a memory of a human moving through a machine now.
Yeah,
yes.
Anime Katsuragi is actually kind of
deep.
They
basically gave her the recruited at a young age from a family as a, soldier bit, which is much closer to Triella's background. And the problem is that even Triella wouldn't care to find out that background, because Triella's other characteristic is She's just determined to be the best. It's like, okay, I'm a cyborg assassin being run by an ex-Interpol agent. I'm going to be the best cybernetic assassin in the whole frickin' world.
But then Hilscher's kind of like almost like this halfway point between Jean and Jose.
Jose is probably a nicer guy overall than Hilscher, although Hilscher's a white knight. Hilscher is very much... It's clear that whatever happened in Amsterdam, Hilscher got in pretty far over his head. And we'll see later, he got in way over his head. You see some of it in Il Teatrino, because, he's quite ready to go off and crusading, and his boss is like, no, I'm not going to put you on that case. You're too good a person to do this sort of thing. You believe that humanity is good.
Yeah.
I'm not. You aren't ready to handle something like this. But, and the point for Triella is that Triella understands that she is what she is because she's working for a guy who is a badly compromised white knight, even as much as she can resent it sometimes.
Well, like, it's a good point of that one is him basically admitting, yeah, I have no idea what the hell I should buy.
Yeah.
A gift to her, and just like, what was your list? Like, just, she goes all these options, and she just says, just get me the damn bear.
It's like, it's genuine, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although, there is an interesting thing, because, she basically asks, the other thing is, Hilscher was right around the corner, he heard her talking to Mario. And he lets it go and doesn't even tell Triella. It's just like,
yeah,
okay. The child is the apple didn't fall far from the tree. He's just like, okay, she's that way because I made her that way. The interesting thing is that when Christmas rolls around, when they get back, Triella has two bears because, yes. As it turns out, Mario sends her a bear. And when in the next season, when you see his daughter, we find out that Mario gives his daughter stuffed bears on Christmas. So we probably figure out where Hillshire got the idea.
Where Hillshire landed from.
The other joke is when the story starts, she has six bears, and they're all named for the seven dwarves. In fact, she's occasionally referred to as Snow White or the princess by the people in the agency, because she's sort of the star, you know, cyborg. So it's,
yeah.
And in fact, her image song is called Brown Snow White. So she has six bears. At the end of it, she has eight bears. So she's filled out the whole set of Disney bears. And you know what her theme's changed over to?
That is?
Roman emperors. That first bear is Augustus.
Mm. Well, I think that about that almost wraps us up on the Christmas episode of Gunslinger Girl.
As we said, it's a very small, self-contained story that jumps off an awful lot of subplots, but also ensures that it's just not misery porn.
Which you'll have to experience yourself. So that takes us into, I guess, what our plans are coming into the new year for 2022. And we're going to start it off with a little bit of a double feature. And our first two episodes, not the same episode, but the first two episodes of the new year are going to be sort of a bookend companion episodes to each other, with the first one being on Studio Ghibli Hayao Miyazaki's Laputa Castle in the Sky, and following it up with Nadia's Secret of Blue Water.
The reasons that we will explain to you, because yes, they are related, believe it or not.
Yes, after rewatching Laputa for the research on that one, it became... There's a lot of things that I suddenly remember from Nadia. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm starting to put two and two together here. So if you have any questions, if you're wondering where you can find Gunslinger Girl, luckily is because of one of those. Just real quick before we say our peace out for this week. It's pretty easy to find it from what I remember. I think it's actually streaming on a couple. Yeah, it's on Funimation's website. It's probably one of the most accessible ones we've talked about outside of some of the other big ones or the Ghibli movies. So it's easy enough to find.
You get the Blu-ray of the whole thing for 30, 40 bucks.
Yeah, it's easy enough to find. So
both seasons.
Yep. And with that said, I've been Rick.
I've been Drew.
And just remember, someone had to draw that.